They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't always cover clowns, but when we do, Conspiracy Bot seems extra excited. This is Hysteria 51.
What can I say? I know what I like.
I have no response to that, thank God.
Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, I am your host on this carnival ride. My name is John Goforth, and alongside is my co-host and the man voted in high school most likely to beat a clown to death, Mr. Brent Hand.
No, actually, John, it was most likely to beat a clown in a deaf comedy jam or poetry slam. I'm a man
Oh, kind of like a battle rap.
DEF. I can see where you got mistaken on that, but yeah.
Got it. Your battle rap game is strong. I'll give you that.
They say I'm the strongest on the block. It is true, so I have that going for me.
The only strongest on the block claim you can make is odor. The mailman won't even come anymore if you are on the porch.
I can still hear his screams. Cheese muffins.
You know, Kyle hasn't been talking as much lately, John. I'm actually okay with that.
Yeah. Now his inane ramblings are only moderately annoying.
Yeah. I guess it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, if you're new to the show and wondering what the hell the deal is with these robots, well, the dumber of the two is the third host of the show, and he loves to take credit for things he has nothing to do with. His name is Conspiracy Bot, and the higher-pitched voice is Conspiracy Bot's robot minion. His name is Kyle. He likes cheese muffins, and you're going to find that out incessantly. And, like we have said so many times, he rarely seems to understand what's going on.
Yeah, I think he's just one processor short. One processor short.
When I finish my clown robot, you'll all be sorry.
Right.
You know, I let you have pretty much any freedom you want. I think I'm going to have to put my foot down. My normal-sized foot, not gigantic cartoonish-sized foot down on this one.
I called that.
Shut up, Kyle. And Brent. We'll see if you can stop me.
Well, before we get to robots creating more robots, except for extra scary because they look like clowns, let's get to tonight's topic, Brent.
Yeah, we need to because my before he uses all my grease paint, you know that's important to me. I don't want him going through all my back catalog of grease paint.
You have a room full of grease paint. I don't
grease
pretend
paint,
to understand.
That's what it's
it.
Called, right? It's a horrible name, grease paint. Ugh. Not have to.
Grease is one of those words that is it onomatopoeia? The words like that sound like what they are?
Yeah. It's grease. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Anyone want to dangle from my participle?
Nope. Okay, moving on. Why the hell, John? This is the focus of this week. Why the hell are clowns so scary? Or are they scary? You know, I guess that's as good of a question as anything. Are they scary to you?
Well, I saw it, so yes, they are.
Well, yeah, you either think of a children's party entertainer or fucking psychopathic murderer. Hard stop. There's not a lot of back and forth on that. It seems
the middle ground was
left for the 1960s housewife putting their kid to watch Bozo out
there. And there's kind of the psycho killer both in real life and in kind of fiction. There's John Wayne Gacy. Who was known as the killer clown.
That's not the fiction side. That's the real life side.
That's the real life side. Yeah. Unfortunately, killed 33 dudes.
Yeah.
And then there's Pennywise from It, both scary, one supernatural and one just a lunatic. And that certainly doesn't help the clown stigma.
Well, and then you have the riding the fence of crazy, murderous and still funny killer clowns from outer space.
That's true.
It's all spelled with K's, so it's different.
You know? I loved that growing up. I was a big fan of that.
That's when you started encasing people in cotton candy and drinking their blood through silly straws.
Doesn't everyone?
Guilty.
Well, so
if they grew up in the Midwest, they did. They do or whatever. Yeah. Still, Yeah, it's a lot, though. It's a lot to talk about. It's a lot to resent when you look at, like, the crazy stuff. If you're a clown, you're probably like, you guys are fucking killing me. But why the fear?
Brent, there's an actual name for the fear, though. I don't believe this is actually recognized by, like, Webster's.
Yeah, well.
But the coulrophobia is the fear of the unreasonable fear of clowns, which is funny. When I read that online, what would we name it if it was a reasonable fear of clowns? Anyway, panic.
Who decides if it's irrational or not? Like, is there a committee that meets in the Hague?
There's an international board of certified clown experts who you stand in front of and are judged. Like, it's like the Council of Ricks.
You're on this panel, but we do not grant you masterhood or whatever the hell they say. Why, though? You know, we've already touched on a little bit of this. Why is, you know, the evil clowns are prevalent in pop culture, and I think that's a good starting point. However, though, according to researchers, which clown researchers is actually a thing, as we found out in doing research, a lot of people have researched clowns. There are actual psychological reasons ingrained why we fear clowns.
Yeah, and not only psychological reasons, but also historical relevancy. Clowns haven't always been Bozo the Clown, right?
Right.
And we'll get to a lot more of that. We have a guest coming up, you know, a foreshadow. One of the reasons that people say that
it's
clowns
crusty,
can be scary is the
it's
makeup.
It's crusty. Is it?
It's can't.
Did he spring for Krusty? This is going to be an expensive cameo.
I got a Krusty cameo.
Yeah.
It's going to be a short interview. It's about 2.5 minutes.
Hey, I heard it's your birthday. All right, I got to talk to you later. This...
Damn it.
Yeah.
Didn't work again.
Son of a bitch.
That's how we get all the guests for Hysteria 51. We just buy cameos.
Right? That's exactly right.
Nick Nolte will be on next week.
Speaking of clowns, we do have a guest, though. I'm excited. And she's an American
excited.
Living over on the other side of the pond.
That's right. So when we come back from break, we're going to be joined by as much of a clown expert as I think you can be.
She does what we do, but in a classy way. She talks about the craziness that's out there, clowns and ghosts and conspiracies. But on places like Smithsonian and
places that are actually respected. Right. Yeah, I don't know why she's classing up this gin joint, but I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Her name is Linda Rodriguez McRobbie. And while she is American by birth, she lives overseas in the foreign land of Great Britain. All of you British listeners,
you guys might not know this, but her name, like we said, is McRobbie. She is one quarter McDonald, so that's why we're having her on here, on her mother's side.
I don't think it works that way.
It's not. I'm not really good at this stuff.
Genetics was never your thing, or genealogy was never your thing.
Anyway, well, before we get to her, though, there are a lot of researchers like that we are talking about, and they vary as far as the reasons we say, or they say, or we think clowns are scary. There's some of the touchstones on it. One is the makeup. It can actually be unsettling. It hides not only the person's identity, but also that person's feelings. Think about that, though. You know, a clown, when you see him, sometimes they look sad. Sometimes they look happy. Sometimes they look, well, are all the time out and out frightening as hell. It just depends on how you see them.
There's also a more, when you reference the makeup and the way they look, kind of a really basic reason too, and that it's kind of like if you get bit or, you know, generally scared out of your wits by a dog when you're little, you wind up not liking dogs for a long time.
Sure can happen, yeah.
You can eventually get over it. You meet a nice dog, you know, whatever. But it's like things happen when you're little and they get ingrained in you. Well, if you have one bad experience or scary experience with a clown, whether that be watching it, whether that be, you know, just a kind of scary encounter in you know, going to the circus or whatever. Now, every other clown kind of looks similar, right? The makeup and the big nose and the hair and all that. And so like now they're scary.
Yeah.
Now they're just scary. No matter how nice they are, they're just scary. Just like a dog would be to you.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of that too. It's not hard to have one bad clown
experience. Well, and you know, you think about this and you don't think, probably your subconscious picks up, like, it's this oversized eyebrows and lips. It's this distorted face. Like, it's human, but slightly off. And I think that's scary for a lot of people.
I forget what that's called, but you're 100% right. That it's like
common fucking sense is how you pronounce it. is what that is.
there's a similar fear. The reason that like CGI really throws people off when it's supposed to be super human like, because there's something about your brain just clicks when it's like it should be a human,
right,
but there's
right.
something off about it. And I think it's similar to that.
Yeah. Like we're saying, that's not the only part. You got the whole way they dress. They're highly unpredictable. They're, a lot of people think of them as mischievous. It puts people on edge. It's not supposed to. A lot of times it's supposed to calm you, but it can do that. And, you know, are they going to squirt you with that that flower? Are they going to give you a balloon?
Which has acid in it.
Are they
going to
steal your soul? Soul valve.
Or steal your soul.
Or rape and murder you and mail bits to their friends and colleagues.
That too. That is a solid chance.
You know, I guess the you know, we always reference it not because of the movies that just came out, but because of the 80s miniseries that we all grew up loving.
Yeah.
I guess it was 90s. I guess the modern day would be if you watched, if you were a kid and you watched Joker.
Yeah, well, I mean, not even modern. It could be not so modern, you know.
And back grandma's like, oh, it's a superhero movie. Let's go. you go watch it and you walk out and like shell-shocked. grandma's hair's all tussled. Like, what just happened?
Well, they say, so people not as smart as us, they call them scientists. They say that these psychological discomforts come, they produce a fear that is then stoked by negative portrayals of clowns in pop culture. These things you're talking about, the Joker and Pennywise and just insert, you know, what the bands that dress like crazy clowns and shit like that. Not ICP. They're good, but everyone else. But, you know, then, of course, you have the human shit stain, John Wayne Gacy. He solidified the idea of the evil clown knocking on our doorstep up here in the lower fourth. Right. That trope becomes common in horror movies and books and subconscious. That's the way that works. This all kind of led up to a 2016 poll that found that Americans were more afraid of clowns than of terrorist attack or even dying.
Metal.
Wow.
That is a hell of a statement. Like, are you worried about cancer, ISIS, or bubbles? You know?
Bubbles it is. It feels like the International Clown Society or whatever their international consortium is needs like a good PR firm.
It's the International Clown Posse.
Oh, Lord. Okay. I wondered how deep we'd get in before that hit. I'm kind of disappointed, Brent, that it took till the first break for ICP to come up.
Oh, man, I tell you. ICP is always here in our hearts, though, John. All right,
and
so speaking of that, it is break time. Let's come back, and when we come back, let's have someone smarter than us tell us why clowns are so freaking scary to so many people. I will say this, spoiler alert, they don't really bother me. I don't fall into one really camp or the other, but maybe that's going to change.
We'll have you convinced by the end of the episode.
We'll see. All
scared
right.
out of your wits.
Well, like I said, people smarter than us coming up after the break on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And, you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value. And you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have, both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term. And it's something that it works, you know, and we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times. And it's always now, right now. Get now. Started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Nation, we are back, and like we promised you, we are not alone. John, for once, I just don't have to stare at you across the wasteland that is Zoom.
We have our show Zoom going, and we have our video on this time because it is not just you and I staring into each other's soulless eyes. We are joined by a very special guest, Linda Rodriguez McRobbie. Linda, thank you for joining us to talk about clowns today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Don't you? This is a resume builder, and I've been on Hysteria 51 to talk about clowns.
I wrote an article for the Smithsonian, published multiple books, and I was on Hysteria 51.
Hey, I love the opportunity to talk about clowns, so this is totally fine for me. And also, I haven't spoken to anybody I'm not related to in about a week and a half, so this is good. Yeah. We're doing well today.
Pandemic combined cylinders. With holidays really yeah. Gives you cabin fever, doesn't it?
It's true. I have no idea what day it is.
Yeah. And we were just chatting before we started because you are actually in the UK. But you're American.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. There are a few of us, but we are here living amongst you.
Yeah.
We originally reached out because you wrote an awesome article that we discovered in our research for this episode about the history and psychology of clowns being scary. And you wrote that for the Smithsonian. This actually goes back a while, back in 2013. And it was so well written and so well researched. We thought, you know, let's just have someone who's actually smart as opposed to our inane ramblings. Come on and talk to us about the history of the psychology of clowns being scary, because it's kind of the crux or the main central theme around the topic of clowns is they're scary and why are they scary? It's, you know, And what's the genesis of that? So, but that you are not just a clown expert. Tell us a little bit about your writing and how you choose your topics and such.
I write about whatever I find interesting, and I find a lot of things interesting. So, I've written about things like really unusual conditions of memory. I've got a book coming out in January called Ouch, Why Pain Hurts and Why It Doesn't Have To. My co-writer, Margie Kerr, and I wrote about this. And basically, it's about the experience of pain and how this experience is created both between our bodies and our brains. I've written about princesses. And I wrote a big piece earlier this year for The Guardian Long Read about a man who had lived his entire life in an iron lung. So evidently, I only write about stuff that begins with P. So princesses, pain, and polio.
I recently just watched a small documentary on a gentleman who has lived in an iron lung his whole life and just how hard it is to find people that repair and work on them now.
Yes. It might have been him, Paul Alexander.
Yes. Yes. And there's like a small group of people that are like keeping them going.
It's a fascinating piece of technology because it's actually really quite simple. And the fact that it's lasted this long, mm-hmm. I mean, the lung that he's living in now is a refurbished one, but he had the same one for more than 50 years. I mean, it's really quite remarkable how these things work.
Well, and luckily it's such a crazy thing that we're not used to. Thank God, because people aren't in iron lungs every day now.
Yeah. I mean, after the eradication of polio in America and in other places, they really sort of disappeared from view. I mean, interestingly though, over the summer during the sort of height of the COVID crisis, and although arguably height is still to come right and now, is now, right. But there was a company that was looking into using the same sort of method of negative pressure to build ventilators for people who were dealing with COVID.
Wow. Yeah.
Because you can still have your face free. You don't need to wear a mask.
Face down or I mean, some of the different types of ventilators.
Intubated.
It's crazy to see how they're used.
Yeah. And they're really, really invasive. And that's actually one of the reasons why Paul didn't want to go, because there are other forms of ventilation that are more portable than an iron lung, which is essentially, I mean, it's basically a submarine that he lives in all the time. But it also, those come with drawbacks as well, including, you know, you having something either down your throat or something over your face all the time, things like that. So yeah, it was a fascinating, fascinating story to do. And it happened at a time it sort of unfolded during this crisis in ways that were really, really interesting.
Well, there's so many examples of things that you can look back at through history, the Spanish flu of 1918 being the obvious one, but other things like polio and the genesis of, you know, Salk coming up with that vaccine, and so many things that we look to in history that were a historical footnote before this pandemic to most of us because we weren't paying attention. But now it is so much more so much more interesting to everybody involved. And speaking of interesting, we always talk on this show about the world of the weird, and that's kind of the basis for this show. And, you know, looking through your bylines, you have written about the world of the weird. You some more normal articles for the Boston Globe. When I say non-normal, I mean that as a compliment, not any other way. But you've written some non-normal stuff for Atlas Obscura, for the Smithsonian, even for Mental Floss, which we're big fans of here. What gets you into kind of this world of the weird stuff? Do you just stumble on topic by topic, or do you go in search of the weird?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, by having some sort of broad interest and being really interested in a lot of different things, you kind of rub up against a lot of new and sort of world of the weird stuff. So like one of my kind of favorite sources is a guy here who was the head of the anomalistic psychology department at Goldsmiths University here. And talking to him, like you just have a conversation with him and all this really fascinating stuff comes out, you know, so that coming into things like the satanic ritual abuse panic and UFO abduction stories and all of these sort of things. So whenever I have a conversation with somebody, I'm usually left with about five more ideas or rabbit holes that I want to go down. And of course, like, you know, as soon as you start looking into something, there's always something more that comes out and in different ways. And Yeah, I'm so, you know, there's just a lot out there in the world.
People always say to us, they say, how do you guys still have topics? Are you running out of topics? Good Lord, no. You know, it's there, like you said, just... they come to you, and we have a spreadsheet that we work off of all the time. And I think we have at any time 400 and some extras we've not even touched yet.
Yeah. You
know, they're just always growing.
Yeah. I mean, there's just endless amounts of information and stories and sort of stuff out there to mine in ways that, you know, there's stories that need to be told in various ways. I did actually get to write about alien abductions for the Boston Globe. So that's even.
Oh, awesome.
Go. Yeah. And monster trucks.
you wrote in the same story?
Very similar.
Two different stories.
Okay.
A lot of times they affect the same group. And the, you know, no, I don't. I'm you not know,
I.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's good times. I love both of them.
And Linda, you wrote a great book. I've only skimmed, so I shouldn't. But I.
He's not good
everything
with
I read
reading.
Was really
That's
interesting.
Why. It's not because he's not into it. He's just.
It's okay.
Princess is Behaving Badly came out back in 2013, and it is right up my alley. It's stories of weird stories from history.
Yes.
I used to work at a company called How Stuff Works, and and just right up my alley with that kind of stuff. What tell us a little bit about what the genesis of that book.
So don't feel bad if you haven't finished reading it yet, because my husband hasn't finished reading it yet either. So that's okay.
Fair enough.
That one actually, that was an idea that Quirk, who I'm sure you're aware of, the publishers, they're fantastic. Yeah. Like, they do loads of wonderful stuff. But they, because of my work through Mental Floss, they had had an interest in working with me on something, and we kind of came up with this project together. They had a couple ideas, but this was the one that we ended up going for. And it was such a sort of rich seam of stories to talk about princesses. And what I enjoyed about that was being able to kind of loosely use the term princess to encompass a lot of really different and interesting narratives. And I have to say, though, like, I feel kind of bad about it, because for a couple of years after having written the book, I was like, people would be like, oh yeah, you know, I hear you've got a book coming out. And I was like, yeah, it's about princesses. I tended to downplay it in a way that was really doing a disservice to me and to the women that I wrote about. You know, I was sort of like, oh, princesses. But it's really actually there's a lot of stories there. There's a lot of story that's, you know, full of people, princesses and women doing good things and bad things. And
bad things. That's the hard part about it. You can't just say they're just badass women because, I wouldn't want to call, you know, someone who murdered people badass. But there's both ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah, like being, you know, like if you end up in Assassin's Creed later, then maybe badass, maybe, I don't know, but like a number of them did.
Which one was in Assassin's Creed? I'm an Assassin's Creed player.
Lucrezia Borgia was in it.
What time period is she from?
She was a Renaissance princess so there was a program also on HBO, I think, the Borgias, that was all sort of about, because they were very like, nefarious, infamous family.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's like,
this is one of those things where I read the word a million times, but I've never heard someone say it out loud, and so I have no idea how it's pronounced.
I hope I'm saying it right, because there's a lot of those words in my life.
One word that we do know how to pronounce now, this is a transition, Brent, is clowns.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. But do you know how to pronounce coulrophobia?
We do, and not only do we know how to pronounce it, I write it out phonetically so that we would actually say it correctly.
So we
coal,
right.
Like C-O-A-L,
ruh. Yes.
Yes.
It's a tough one.
So, Linda, you know, you wrote a great article about it. If anyone wants to read it, it's at smithsonian.com.
You'll have a link to it in our show notes. So you can find
it'll be in the show notes, yeah. Let's start with the history of clowns, because they are not a modern invention.
No. So pretty much every culture has had a clown-like character. These tend to be sort of mischievous. They tend to be the characters that appear in stories, that appear in ritual, that appear in kind of people getting together and having some kind of communication, that are able to sort of shine a funhouse mirror kind of thing. Like they reflect society, but they also are figures of mischief. They are sort of lords of misrule. They're kind of like tricksters. The Loki. Yeah, trickster. Like, and most cultures have something like this. And so they've been around for a very long time. And in terms of the theatrical tradition, or in terms of sort of how we think of clowns, that's a slightly more modern invention. But the character, the figure of this kind of slightly anarchic, mischievous, impish character has been around forever, basically.
I didn't realize that. Of course, the medieval kind of take on it from court jesters, very well aware of. If you've ever looked at a deck of tarot cards, you know, you've got the Joker. You mentioned in the article ancient Egypt.
Yes.
And they had their own version of clowns.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And ancient China had their own version of clowns. Ancient Rome had their own version of clowns called the Stupidists.
The Stupidists. I would surmise the kind of genesis of the word stupid.
Yes.
From that was their stock fool in so many of the dramas, right?
Right. I mean, Native American traditions also have a clown-like character. So really, it's very kind of deep in how we tell stories to have a character who can be disruptive. And these also, you know, they have different kind of cultural meanings and interpretations and uses. You know, in some cultures, especially ones that are very feudal or very hierarchical, very top-down organized, these tend to be the only people, the only characters who can point out where things are bad, to poke fun at, to sort of be the, you know, I'm thinking of King Lear and you know, there's jester there. So there's the fool, those kinds of characters. And there are other uses as well. And I think, you know, there's just a lot of use out of a character who can shine light on the cracks and right. do it in a way that people enjoy and have fun with, but are also a little bit kind of intimidated by. I mean, because if you think about, like, when you go to stand-up comedy, which I don't because I have a fear of stand-up comedy, there's a sense of, you know, you might get made fun of. You might be in the bright light. And so people enjoy that kind of uncomfortable tension of what's going to happen next when you have a character like that kind of unleashed onto the stage.
And I suppose also the uncomfortable tension of having the mirror put up to your face. You know, we see especially in the older versions, the worst traits of humanity, you know, the drunken, bumbling buffoon. And that actually brings us to kind of the more modern day clowns. You spent some time in your article talking about Grimaldi.
Yes.
One name that some of us might already be aware of, but really thought of as the, you know, the proto clown. I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of gave birth to what we think of, or the entertainer, the circus clown, the right. person. I mean, he was a stage clown, but it's kind of gave way to the modern day of thinking right. of how we look at clowns.
So Joseph Grimaldi, from, you know, sort of the early 1800s up to about 1830, he really transformed the notion of what a clown could be in the theatrical tradition. So before him, you could have a clown character and it would be sort of this yokel or like a rustic sort of, you know, maybe drunk, maybe wanting to, you know, have sex a lot, that sort of thing, like very lusty. And they were sort of silly buffoon characters. And he was one of the first who put on the makeup, who transformed into something kind of more otherworldly. And he was also the first to really marry the physical slapstick comedy to this kind of character. But at the same time, he really sort of set the mold. And a lot of the sort of fault for this actually lies with Charles Dickens, who wrote his memoirs after Grimaldi died.
Yeah, the Pickwick Papers, right?
So he wrote the Pickwick Papers, and in the Pickwick Papers, there's a character, a sort of dissipated, drunken clown character that you encounter. But after that, Dickens took Grimaldi, because Grimaldi was incredibly visible and popular. I mean, he was a real celebrity. There was something like an eighth of London had probably seen him on stage at the time that he was alive.
Wow.
That's not really
on TV, obviously.
Yeah, right. And we're also talking about a time in London's history, too, where it's expanding dramatically. So this is a big population we're talking about. Like, a lot of people would have seen this. And so Dickens really kind of took... Now, it is true that Grimaldi's life was pretty pretty grim in a lot of ways. By the end of his life, he had lost his son who died essentially of alcoholism. He was himself an alcoholic. He had been in this theatrical world for so long, and had been sort of really pushed on the stage by his father. So he had a lot of stuff going on there to unpack.
Didn't they say that the slapstick comedy, the physical nature of his comedy, was so overwhelming to his body that he essentially was unable to do a lot of like normal tasks because of how hurt?
You see that a lot with after that early performers, actors for television. Yeah. Look at the people that wore prosthetics for monsters and things like that, and then ended up completely destroying their bodies for their craft.
Yeah.
It's a crazy time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he really hurt himself, you know, and this was, you know, he was left disabled by this. And at one point he joked, "I am grim all day, but I make you laugh at night." And that the fact that everybody kind of recognized that he had such a sort of terrible life, but that he could go on stage and present this character and make people laugh and, you know, sort of bring it out of that. It was Dickens, though, who really established this narrative that in order for him to be funny, he had to be in this pain during the day. It was this sort of like he earned his laughs by mining this dark space, and it was this sort of, or, you know, it was this kind of transaction that, like, you know, he paid for the laughs with his own body, kind of thing. Very Dickensian.
We have such a famous person like this, like you said. An eighth of London at that time had seen him. You know, he's a celebrated figure. How do we go from that, something so prolific, to where we are now, where we have clowns dressing up and scaring people, and John Wayne Gacy murdering people, and insane clown posse singing, and, you know, the Joker.
Juggalos.
All this. How do you get from something that is so prolific to something that has become a caricature of itself almost?
So I think a lot of what happened, so Joseph Grimaldi was, this was not entertainment for children, right? And in fact, there wasn't a lot of entertainment that was specifically for children. Even Punch and Judy shows, which, you know, now we would very much identify as being for children, are, you know, they come from a dark place. So up through the end of the 19th century, clowns could be both. Clowns were not required to be fun for children. They didn't need to be this kind of innocent thing that by the 1950s they had become. And even in the 1930s, you know, you had characters like Weary Willie who, you know, were coming from this kind of tragic depression era sort of environment that produced this kind of, you know, they're sad but funny but sad, because everybody's life was sad but funny but sad in some ways. And so it wasn't really until the 1940s and 50s and 60s that clowns had become entertainment almost solely for children. A lot of that had to do with television, with Bozo the Clown, with, you know, Clarabelle the Clown. So by the 1950s, you have this sort of very established, also with the birth of circuses. So by that time, too, by the end of the 19th century, and in the beginning of the 20th century, you have more circuses and circuses in America, the Three Ring Circus, you know, they become a big thing. And it slowly morphs into that the clown is entertainment for children. And that becomes the sort of, that really becomes a kind of turning point for a lot of people. And once the clown didn't get to be also naughty, but had to mostly be for children, had to be this sort of infantilized version of what it had been before, it becomes really fertile ground as a character for horror. Because once something is in the mask and wearing the makeup and is presenting a face that could be innocent, that could be pleasant, that could be fun, it becomes, you know, perfect fodder for nightmares.
It also follows the narrative. This might not be fair, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it, but it also follows the narrative of once America gets a hold of something, we bastardize it, we homogenize it, we ruin it. You know,
try to wring out everything that's good out of it. So we can,
exactly. I mean, and that could be something as simple as like the memes where you see the picture of a large soda in America versus, you know, around the world, down to, you know, some of the more popular characters that weren't originally American, that when those characters, when there was some sort of new telling of the story in the Americanized version, it's, again, it's Disneyized, it's McDonaldized, it's just, you know, just not great. Now, I'm not saying I necessarily subscribe to that narrative, certainly for everything, but do you think that the American pop culture is the reason for the change in what a clown was?
To some degree, I would say yes. And part of that is also bolstered by the fact that in other cultures, the clown is still more or less a figure of fun. So, this is actually a really important point that I wanted to really bring up, is that a lot of what we talk about when we talk about scary clowns is something in English speaking culture. In Western American culture, that's also kind of filtered down over here in the UK. In other places, so there have been a number of studies that demonstrate that the studies that seem to demonstrate that children do well with clowns in pediatric hospitals, that it leads to a reduction of symptoms or preoperative anxiety, things like that.
Yeah, that was something you talked about. That's fascinating to me that's so different than what we are, at least how I think children are going to be like, oh my God, stay away.
There's even a more recent study that came out in 2020 that was a sort of meta study of a literature review of a number of studies that seemed to sort of back this up as well, that this idea that clowns have a, hospital clowns have a beneficial purpose. And those also were done in other countries. So most of the research is coming from other countries that where clowns are still a figure of fun, and clowns do still have that. I mean, you know, one of the things that really struck me when I was writing this piece is that the people who want to be clowns are not doing it because who want to be clowns and want to entertain people and make people laugh and make children feel good and that sort of thing. They're not doing it because they want to scare people. They're doing it because they want to bring people joy. And so you do really see that, like, I so again, the kind of bigger takeaway is that this is also a cultural overlay. It may be that America did take the clown and turn the clown into a figure of real fear by putting it into scary settings, but that also works really well, right? Like, it's very successful, you know, when there are real stories like John Wayne Gacy being the killer clown. You know, there are those kinds of stories in the social narrative, but then you also have this kind of, I'm not certain if it is an American obsession, but we do like to mine darkness in light places. And my favorite example in working on this was the Poltergeist story. I mean, Poltergeist was brilliant at taking the most banal of things, this California suburb that is supposed to be just completely anodyne and completely safe, and turning it into something really, really, really scary.
Right. And now, can you ever look at one of those clowns and not be just absolutely terrified of it? Something that you would find up until then in a child's bedroom.
Yes.
You mentioned in Poltergeist, you know, the other, like another trope that is scary today, but wasn't before that. That's such a good point. White noise.
Oh yeah.
The television, just with the static and the white noise, like, what that is. If I'm just sitting alone in a dark room and that's on TV, I'm creeped out today.
Yeah. I mean, fried chicken ruined for me forever.
So I think that brings us to probably the penultimate question as it comes to clowns. We understand the history now. We understand some examples, but you know, we even understand the cultural context, but the question at its heart is,
what's your favorite ICP song is what he's getting at.
Is exactly what I'm getting at.
Insane Brain. Always. The only one I know.
but why is it so effective? Because no matter how scary I would want to make, I don't know, Tarzan or some other, you know, character that isn't traditionally scary, no matter how, like, it wouldn't be as effective. Why do you think that it's such an effective use of clown to be scary?
Well, I think there's only two parts to this. One is that you probably could make Tarzan scary. Like, you really, you know, it is possible to make almost anything scary. But what makes clowns really successful is that they've always had this sort of undercurrent of darkness. And part of that is derived mm-hmm. from the fact that they are a character that can get away with a lot of things. I mean, even, you know, even John Wayne Gacy mm-hmm. pointed that out when he said, when he's getting arrested and he says, you know, clowns can get away with murder, which is literally the creepiest thing ever anybody has ever said.
And we're done. Ever. Here's the answer.
Yeah. You know, so you have a character who is socially permitted to get away with a lot. You also mm-hmm. have a character that from the 19th century on was wearing a mask, has their face painted. And it's very difficult to read emotions from someone when you can't really see their face. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that really kind of messes up. That also sort of falls into the kind of uncanny valley area, which, you know, when facial expressions aren't genuine or don't match up what they think that we should be seeing, that really messes us up.
You just said uncanny valley, and that made me think of something that we were talking about, the uncanny valley, on our Facebook group this week, and someone said the thought of uncanny valley makes us think that somewhere in our evolution we learn that if something looks and feels human but isn't, we should fear it. And that's a terrifying thing to think of it when you think of it that way, like if it's a learned evolutionary response
what it really is, in part, it is a little bit of that, because basically your brain works on shortcuts.
Why don't we define that for everybody listening?
Yeah, so Uncanny Valley, so I've read about dolls too, why dolls are scary.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So the Uncanny Valley basically sort of describes a curve where the closer something gets to being human-like, the kind of more creeped out, like it's more like a bell curve where it kind of goes mm-hmm. up and then down again. So it's like, you're okay with it. You're like,
I like it.
Yeah.
Too and real. Then, fuck this.
Yeah,
I hate
too,
it.
Not, yeah. Yeah.
Brent, that's what we were talking about in the intro. That's the CGI getting too real.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
But
yeah.
It's also the CGI not being real enough. Because
dead
you
eyes
see that
and things
in,
like that. Yeah.
Yeah, like Polar Express, which I've never been able to bring myself to watch.
Never seen it. Same.
Yeah, it's a bit too much. But there are, you know, are very successful examples of when, I mean, I would say, I think that Tintin was actually a pretty good, successful example of how CGI could work in that motion capture vein. So like, mm-hmm. You know, but it's really, it's kind of a tightrope really. Like it's a bit, you know, stray too far on either side of trying to be too human or not human enough. And you don't hit it right. And it's because we are finally attuned to what a human should look like. But at the same time, this is partly because evolutionarily your brain needs shortcuts, right? You can't always be assessing something and trying to figure out what it is. And so you've got cognitive shortcuts. This is why we see faces in parking meters. It's why we see faces in trees. Yeah.
Or
Jesus
why we have the, nope, don't like that. You don't know why.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out.
So, you know, in order to have survived this long, like we need to be able to sort of keep our resources on the things that we need them to be on. And those include our cognitive resources. So, you know, being able to identify a face very quickly is evolutionarily preferred, but it also means that it kind of messes us up when we want to read emotions from stuff. And we read emotions from people and we need that. I mean, that's important. Like if you are settling in for a nice meal with your tribe and all of a sudden you hear shouting, you need to know that's either a joyful shout because mm-hmm. someone's really happy, or there's a raiding party coming to set your house on fire. So, you know, we need that.
I think the big thing that blows my mind and the big takeaway in this is, even though clowns have evolved the way they have, the way we look at them, the way they've changed throughout history, we, the proverbial everyone, we might look at them now as this scary, terrifying thing. As you said, children that are sick in hospitals, going into surgery and stuff, they still have that innocence, and it still can be this thing where it's saving lives. It's making people feel better because they haven't been exposed to the same negative reinforcement maybe that we have been for one way or another.
Yeah, and I think that's really the kind of the thing that's happened in a lot of Western culture, is that clowns, because there were so many images, especially starting from the 1980s on, of scary clowns, kind of itself a reaction to the infantilized clown of the 1950s and 60s, mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, sort of mining that dark territory, that more images of scary clowns are put into this kind of media cycle. So more people are afraid, and then that makes more images, and you sort of have this ever kind of growing cycle where more negative images of clowns are replacing positive images of clowns. And that was certainly something that a lot of people that I talked to for this story talked about, is that, you know, we're reaching a point where there are more scary clowns than there are positive clowns. Now, that said, there are still positive images of clowns in some places. Although, like, my kids are watching Captain Underpants, the show on Netflix, which is actually really, really funny. But there was a scary clown in it. And there's this sort of like tension between it being like a funny, scary clown. But, you know, so you have like, you know, and also like Krusty the Clown, characters like that. So you have these kinds of, we've kind of entered a really interesting territory with the clown as a scary character, where it's a bit more nuanced than it's just killer clowns from outer space. Yeah.
Right. And I guess that coupled with the decline of circuses in general for myriad of reasons that we don't have time to talk about today, there's also a lack of that, of the positive experience that we all had, you know, growing up. I mean, I certainly went to the circus growing up, and those positive experiences don't exist anymore. So unless someone is literally creating new stuff with the non-scary clown or the fun clown, the newer generations are only going to be left with the exposures that they have.
Although there are also, I mean, that is absolutely true. And I think that's the case. I think there are also some interesting directions that clowning has taken, in the same way that there are interesting directions that the circus has taken through places like Cirque du Soleil. Now, that's obviously the biggest one. Yeah. But like here in London, back when I used to, you know, go places before I had children, there were some really cool sort of artistic interpretations of circuses that were on, you know, like at the dance, one of the sort of big dance venues. They had this amazing show that was put on by a Swedish circus that sort of, it was very narrative. It took a lot from Cirque du Soleil, but also had its own stuff. And it's just, so it's definitely evolving. And I think clowns can take that as well, and are taking that as well. You know, so they're still like, so, you know, sometimes if you go, again, back when people used to go places, you know, you can still see people doing some of the things that are traditionally associated with clowns, but with less of the makeup, for example, you know, maybe just a red nose. Right. So I think that's happening.
The craziest story, just going off on a tangent that I have. So I live right outside of Chicago, and we have, I live right next to Showman's Rest, is where I've actually taken John to. Showman's Rest, if you're not familiar, back in 1918, 86 members of the Higginback Wallace Circus were killed in a train accident.
Oh, and my gosh.
They brought them to Showman's Rest, and there's this mass burial grave. Each of them, a lot of them, they didn't know who they were. It was such a bad. So they just have numbers. So every year up until last year, they stopped. International Clown Week did a festival of clowns in the cemetery. So you drive by, there's just a sea of clowns scattered throughout a cemetery entertaining children. It is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's amazing.
And so they quit in 2019, maybe 2018, but it had been going on for decades. And it is a crazy, crazy thing. I thought it was a joke. When I moved here, I drove by and I saw 100 clowns in a cemetery, and I thought, that's tasteless. Like, what are you doing? Then I found out it's a real thing, and people bring their families. And I'm still a little on the fence with it. You know, I don't know.
It's interesting. I mean, because like here, you know, every year since I think 1959, they've done the clown service at the church near where Joseph Grimaldi is buried. And clowns go to a church service dressed in full clown regalia. And I mean, it's still going on as far as I know. I mean, I think it's interesting too, like my reaction to clowns in a cemetery is in some ways, I think, a bit American in the sense that like, ooh, cemetery, scary area.
Right,
but actually, you know, especially living here where cemeteries are like, there's cemeteries everywhere. You just simply, they just are. So I think it's a kind of maybe kind of easing that cultural fear of death,
right,
which I think is really, other cultures do better at it.
Right. Well, and it's also a little weird when you're walking through and you're reading the headstones and it's like Flippy, Laffy, unknown mutilated male number 12. That's how they're literally put on there. And you're like, oh, God. And then there's a guy juggling behind there. You know, you're like, oh, God, I don't know how I feel about this. But I'm feeling something.
that's a lot. And I think that's good, right? Like, I you know, I like the mixing of emotional states. I think that's
good. Literally, and that is how they're marked. Like, some of them had names. Some of them are just, seriously? You know, unknown burned female number 9.
Oh, golly. Oh, my goodness.
Well.
Nice. Place I want to go visit.
But the good news is that when they do congregate, it's
someone's rest.
The good news is when they do congregate, it is a celebration. And I think that's a good cap to the clown story. But Linda, before we let you go, what are you working on now? You mentioned you have a book coming out. Tell us more.
I've got a book coming out with my writing partner, Marky Care. It's called Ouch, Why Pain Hurts and Why It Doesn't Have To. It'll be out here in the UK on January 21st. And in the US, I think I want to say it's like March 30th or something along those lines. The
I'm
publisher
tell you,
is
I'm not excited because Patrick Swayze told me pain don't hurt. So, you know,
is that from Roadhouse?
That is from Roadhouse.
Yeah.
John has it tattooed across both of his biceps. So,
yeah, I mean,
and
I got to remind
hurt
myself
when you got it done. I was crying
of the irony.
I'm trying to tend to try to channel what we thought about in the book and what we wrote about in the book most of the time because, you know, living is painful, right? So, but it's I think it's really appropriate too that it's coming out in January here because evidently there was one study that demonstrated that people associate the month of January with pain more than any other month.
Wow.
Does those make sense?
Maybe it's because they're doing their diets and trying to, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the holidays are over, so all the celebratory stuff, right. But it's still it's cold, it's nasty, it gets dark early. Yeah.
This is why we have wholeheartedly started to celebrate Burns Night, because it's the end of January, and it's a much nicer way. Like, it's good to have something to look forward to, especially if it's whiskey. So
it's a great
well,
point.
Well, not to keep bringing up the TV shows, but existence is pain. Mr. Meeseeks has taught us that from Rick and Morty, too. So
that's true. You know? That's true. Existence is pain.
See, and like Life is Pain, Princess from Princess Bride. Like, there's a lot.
Yeah. Now, if they want to read more of your articles, you have your own website.
LindaRodriguezMcRobbie.com. And I am the only Linda Rodriguez McRobbie, as far as I know, in the world. So you can't, but I am definitely not the only Linda Rodriguez in the world. There's a lot of us, but the only Linda Rodriguez McRobbie, as far as I know. And unfortunately, I have not updated my website in a very long time, but you can definitely still find stuff that I've written there, as well as I'm on Twitter at Linrod, I believe. And I tend to be a bit better at posting stuff that I've written posting there. Stuff.
Well, if anyone wants to follow you, you can find all the links. We'll have them in our show notes. So guys, just pop down there and you can find them and read about princesses and pain, which go hand in hand.
Princesses,
right?
Pain, polio, anything else that begins with platypus. I don't know. I haven't written about platypus yet. Maybe next. We'll see.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for joining us. We can't wait to have you back to talk about more World of the Weird stuff that's maybe not clowns.
Amen.
Happy to. Got lots of it.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate it. Nation, we'll come back to put a bow on this clown surprise that we've given you this week. That's next on Hysteria 51.
Clown surprise. That is a
wild surprise. It makes it sound like you're going to jump out of a cake.
Oh, John, are you ready? Because we're headed to the cemetery to do some clown shenanigans. We already did they never heard that episode. We did that for another project we were working on, but we've literally been there.
The place you were talking about, what's it called again?
Woodlawn Cemetery and Showman's Rest is what
Showman's
the actual,
Rest.
That
yeah,
part
we,
of it
we
is
went there
Showman's
and we were working. We were working on a TV project.
Yeah,
and.
Yeah.
That didn't come to fruition, but we
TV project
did
that didn't come to fruition, number 1,263. Not really, but it seems like it.
Well. but we've made dollars on it. I mean, dollars. Anyway, the it was really cool walking around there and seeing all of that. And again, big thanks to Linda for joining the show as well. She was great.
Yeah, she was. She was a lot of fun. And even though she's in Great Britain, we won't hold it against her. You know how that goes.
Did you realize like 30% of our listeners are in the UK, right?
Yeah, that's why I have to, you know, give them shit.
We only kid the ones we love.
I hate everyone, so that doesn't really fly with me.
Well, I just got to thank you for being quiet while Linda was on and not ruining the show.
It's all good. I just spent the time thumbing through your extensive ICP vinyl collection, John.
I didn't even know they had vinyl. Good on you, John. Is that the Faygo collection? Is that what they call that?
Yes, yes. It is disquieting when C-Bot is silent. It's kind of like when if you have a kid, I have a kid, or a dog, and they're in the other room, and they're not making any noise.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, well, what are they up to?
Same thing with Lisa. That's exactly how I live my life. I have not heard her in 15 minutes. Oh, shit, she's shopping online.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Oh, God. Just wait for Amazon. So, Brent, we didn't hit every famous clown. There's some that we didn't mention yet.
Yeah, like Sideshow Luke Perry. Rest in peace. He was literally one of Krusty's Sideshow.
That's right.
It was his stepbrother, I think. Well, speaking of that, we did touch on also Krusty. You can't think of clowns and not mention Krusty, which we
that's
did.
Right.
But man,
that's right.
What a prolific thing that he's got. You know, it's like the sad, pathetic.
Not scary, just disappointing.
No. Maybe Krusty Burger might be a little bit scary, but otherwise, yeah.
No, that's true. And speaking of Krusty Burger, I suppose the origin of that, Ronald McDonald.
Right. And outside of that, we would be remiss not to speak a little bit more on Bozo because we're in the Chicagoland area. Back in the day, if you wanted to get your kid on Bozo, it was a minimum 10-year wait. So people would be like, I'm going to have a child in about 3 years. I better start putting my name in for Bozo tickets now. Literally,
wow.
That is how long the wait was just to be in the audience to see
that's
the Bozo
crazy.
Show. Bozo
that's crazy.
And Cookie and I actually used to watch it from time to time.
Oh, I watched it. I watched it growing up all the time. Obviously, the best was the grand prize game.
Grand prize.
Game.
A crisp new $100 bill in that last bucket.
Oh, and the what was it? The radio flyer.
Yeah, so they'd bring it out with full of prizes.
Yeah,
that was like their thing. And I wonder if you got to keep the radio flyer. I hope so.
Oh, I think they did.
Be a
I definitely think they
you
did.
Bastard.
I'd be pissed if they didn't. And then a little bit later on, they actually came out with the grand prize game ticket game that you could play in like arcades.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember that? It was not a real representation of the grand prize game. The buckets were much closer, but I remember seeing
Well, and then the guy that we had at your sixth birthday, Pogo, he was pretty fun.
That is not true. That is not true. So, yeah, that was the name of John Wayne Gacy's clown alter ego.
John Wayne Gacy, you can look, he was a painter. He did a lot in prison and things like that, and some of them aren't bad. I wonder how expensive a John Wayne Gacy original.
That's great. It's like a Hitler painting. It's like, who wants that?
You know? I know. Well, I'll tell you who. Zach Bagans. He's the one who bought like the painting of Charles Manson painting where they used Charles Manson's blood in the ink. And I was like, I wonder, number one, why you would want that. Number two, what would something like that go for? It was like $2,000. Two or four. I was like, wow, that's way less than I thought I was going to go for.
Yeah. I mean, the weird shit that, you know, you shouldn't want to contribute to, that's always the stuff that goes for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I got outbid on that one in the last minute and I was pissed.
Well, Brent, before we wrap here, I know we're going long. You had brought up one other series of clown tales that I definitely think's worth hitting on. And that was a few years back, the scary clowns that ran out of nowhere.
Yeah, the 2016, I guess we could call them the clown sightings, the clown incidents. It was a weird one, really. Not that they don't happen in other years, but in 2016, the U.S. was sparked in this hotbed of eyewitness accounts of, and not only eyewitness, tons of videos of children, adults, people driving, walking, doing things, and clowns coming out of the darkness out of nowhere and chasing them. Not just like physically chasing them.
Yeah, it really strange. And then it reports from children that clowns were also hanging out around schools mm-hmm. and parks and trying to coax them out of the woods with promises of money or candy.
Right.
Shit, I would have gone in a second.
And I actually would have felt bad for the clowns at that point.
Those poor fucking clowns. He comes back. The clown's like, oh, man, it's really dark and scary in here. And Seaman's like, how do you think I feel when I'm going to have to come out here back on my own? That's like an old joke about me. Anyway, terrible. Yeah.
And it wasn't an isolated incident either.
Yeah. And I, like I said, it was the U.S., but it was really happening all over Canada, Brazil, Russia, the U.K. And I like the fact that we're talking about this now because it feels like the monoliths to me.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Social media gets a hold of something. The regular media gets a hold of something and people go, that's a hell of an idea. In yep, one way or that, another, and they
so
start
true.
Perpetrating.
It becomes viral. It's no longer the person who is doing it. It's now just any Yahoo who wants to throw on some pancake makeup and a big red nose.
Well, in this one, it was kind of an interesting thing because they did find places where they were on Facebook and Twitter, and groups were trying to plan events and meetings and tomfoolery and shenanigans. Now, this was also around the time that the new It movie was coming out. And a lot of people, like you kept saying, was it a viral campaign? Well, a lot of people said they thought that maybe this was a viral campaign that got out of hand. And they just said,
for the It movie?
Nope, I'm not going to. We washed our hands of it and never really
We had nothing to do with that. We fired the marketing agency. We are done.
Yeah. And so places literally at that time started banning clown costumes at events and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. Do you remember it as well as I do?
Yeah, I do. I mostly remember cars and getting seen videos from cars of clowns literally running from the forest towards the cars and multiple across multiple locations. So it did take on a life of its own for a while. And it's just it's the personification of scary. I mean, a clown running out of the forest with a knife towards your car. You know what's surprising? I know people just were trying to be creepy and weird, and it's surprising that one of the clowns didn't get killed.
Right, like, right.
You do that to the wrong person. Because guess what? They're in a 2-ton vehicle.
Right.
They're going to run your ass over.
Right. I guess anyway. That fight or flight, you know, it's just.
Exactly. It just takes over. Yeah. But not, we're not excusing killing clowns. I want to be clear about that. Everyone. Right. Especially you, C-Bot.
On that note, something that has always pissed me off is a clown skull is indistinguishable from a regular skull once you get all the meat off of it.
That is, no. I mean, okay. Yes.
That's probably a good place to wrap this. Brent, let's end with this. We'll each give our thought on it, but why do you think clowns are scary?
The human condition has made us take something that is joyful and loving and turn it dark, because that's what we do over and over and over again, no matter what it is.
It's true. It's true. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. The only other thing I would add is I think they are more easily used in scary settings because of the trust or we allow clowns at the circus to come up and, you know, push our hat off our head mm-hmm. or, you know, tie our shoelaces together, like little things. And we trust them because we know that it's a safe place. And all they're going to do is minor annoyances. They're just going to be that jokester.
Sorry. Yeah,
that trickster. And then when the trickster comes up and starts with in some cases doing violent things, that trust has been violated.
Yeah, right. And also, we don't all float down there. That was a lie. That's just bullshit right now.
Brent and I went and looked. Yeah. Didn't happen.
Real quick, I know we're going long. I just want to throw, there are a lot of good clowns out there. There are a lot of people that do this for the right reasons. Clowns Without Borders is a thing. They're helping people all across the world. It's a good thing they're trying to break the stigma. So if you can, just realize that if there's good in the world, someone is trying to manipulate it into something gross. Period. Full stop. This is just an example of that.
We are pro-clown here.
Yeah. Go to clown college. Get yourself an act. Also, if you want to see a good clown turn bad in that portrayal, watch Vulgar. It is a View Askew Kevin Smith universe adjacent movie. It's not going to be easy to find, but it is a fantastic movie and well worth
it. Oh, nice. I haven't seen it. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, very much so. If they wanted to talk about clowns, though, where's the perfect forum to do so?
The perfect forum to do that is Hysteria Nation. It is our Facebook discussion group where we talk about the topics of the week and a whole lot more. Just go to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation.
Odd, I would have went with the men's urinal for the perfect place to talk clowns, but whatever.
He's just in for the glory holes.
Also, facebook.com/hysteria51pod. That is our Facebook page. Patreon, patreon.com/hysteria51. If you guys, all right, we are at 115-ish. And for $1, everyone gets a full back catalog. You get to listen to everything. It is today. This is going to go out on the 4th of January, New Year. If by February, the end of February, we have hit 150 people, John and I will do a Zoom where we put on clown makeup. I'm voluntarily.
He just volunteered me for that.
What's that?
I said you just volunteered me for that.
You goddamn right. I will even send you the grease paint. Don't worry about the branding and why it doesn't have any labeling on it. I'll send it to you and you just use it.
Just you'll send me the grease paint. Great.
Yeah.
Or maybe Brent will wear a clown makeup and I'll eat something that you guys vote on.
That's
we'll do a cafeteria 51.
Like a clown. Maybe it'll eat a clown. We'll figure it out.
You could vote on a clown. Maybe a pig dressed up like a clown. Anyway, you'll vote on it. You all seem to enjoy it when we eat gross things. So vote away.
So
and pick
by the end
gross.
Of February, if we get to 150 different patrons, if not, no clown for you.
But I'll probably still eat something gross.
Right. Voicemail 773-669-7277. Again, that's 773-669-7277. If you forget any of these links, hysteria51.com. Tell a friend. Tell a loved one. Tell a hated. Tell a clown that you heard about him on here. And don't forget also to visit the show links to find out more about Linda and where you can read and learn about her.
Yeah, and look out for her new book in March if you're in the States here. Last thing I want to say, Nation, you might be listening to this and in Hysteria Nation, and we don't know it, and you are a clown. Like you might moonlight as that, or that might be your profession. Let us know. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I know of one for sure that's been a professional clown for a while. You're not alone. It's funny. Someone was like, one of my favorite things is someone posted, we had a thread, and they said, it was post something that you think you're the only member of Hysteria Nation that's ever done this. And one guy, and I'm so sorry I'm forgetting your name, I was like, I know I'm the only person on here who's ever won Jeopardy. And someone that we went to college with did also. And I'm like, nope, literally you're not. Like, how random is that? Like, won an episode of Jeopardy.
It's always somebody else.
Yeah, you're like, son of a bitch. He was in there. So anyway, those are our thoughts. Yeah, let us know all your favorite clowns and favorite flavor of Faygo. You know, we'll keep on brand.
Favorite clowns and favorite Faygo.
There you go.
That's perfect.
With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite. Join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.